From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our relationship with it. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak. Thanks for tuning in. On the phone, Urith Rosen. She's a journalist with the online publication Arctic Today. And we're here to talk to her about an interesting piece she posted last week titled Arctic Lightning Has Tripled Since 2010, Thanks to Rapid Warming. Urith, thank you for joining us on This Green Earth this morning.
Yeah, hi.
Well, let's start here. Give us just a background about what this article is about.
This is one of a couple of articles I've written recently about Arctic or Alaska lightning, and this one is about a study out of the University of Washington that has actually measured all the lightning events. It uses a system called the Worldwide Lightning Locator Network that was set up by the University of Washington, and it measured the lightning from 2010 for 10 years starting in 2010 and found this this increase above latitude 65. The way that the lead author, who is this guy Robert Holdsworth, who's an atmospheric physicist, who's a big lightning specialist and pretty much set up this lightning network. The way that he describes it is it's lightning has tripled in that period, from 2010 in just over a 10-year period. But you could also look at it another way, and if you look at it a different way, you could see that lightning strokes, which are the very, very, that's a very precise measurement of lightning charges moving, that had actually increased eightfold in the period. Mm-hmm. But he preferred to use the tripling of lightning events.
Right, and so what do you mean by latitude 65?
Okay, so latitude 65 is basically the Arctic. This was the first study that looked at exactly what has happened as opposed to modeling what will happen, exactly what has happened with lightning in the whole Arctic. Everything above basically latitude 65 is approximately the Arctic Circle. So everywhere. And he even, the study even mentioned that there'd even been lightning close to the North Pole.
Wow.
And that's very, I can tell you living in Anchorage that, I grew up on the East Coast and I've lived in Colorado. So we don't, in Anchorage, we don't have the lightning storms that are common, in a place like Colorado or Utah, right, or even on the East Coast. So lightning is for people in Anchorage, lightning is kind of a big deal. It's very newsworthy. But anyway, it's not to get thunderstorms, you have to have a certain amount of heat going up into the atmosphere. And it's kind of hard to get that on a surface that's covered with ice or covered with snow. So it is a big deal if it happens in a snowy climate.
Right.
Or an icy climate.
It's fascinating to hear about this increase of lightning in the Arctic. But beyond that there are some impacts from it. So share with us a little bit about what this increase of lightning strikes can actually do to the Earth there.
Yeah, of course, the top impact that people would think of and be concerned about is wildfire.
Right.
And, that's like the number one thing, you have to remember that in the boreal forest, especially more inland parts, lightning is actually common, very common. Lightning started fires are common. And you know, a necessary part of the ecosystem. Wildfires are part of the thing that help get birch, hardwoods established, and they make clear out some of the spruce for the hardwood. So it's, you know, it is normal in a place like around Fairbanks or Siberia to have a lot of lightning sparked wildfires every summer. But as we can see from the long-term record, the intensity and the duration of the wildfire season is increasing long-term, increasing a lot. And also with lightning, some of these lightning started fires are happening in places that are not the usual places for, that's the number one thing that people worry about with lightning in the Arctic.
Right.
Obviously wildfires aren't in and of themselves, you know, per se bad, but it's a question of degree and location.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. We saw in your article, too, that in addition to kind of not taking place in maybe the locations where you would have expected wildfire in the past, they're also burning areas like, you know, sort of in the tundra, the peatlands, which are really important forms of carbon storage.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Yeah, that's even last year in Alaska, which was a really, you know, how fire seasons are. You get a big one, and then you get like a little one. Last year was a really little fire, you know, little fire season in Alaska, but we still had a fair number of tundra fires on the Seward Peninsula. That's the peninsula that sort of sticks out to Russia. That's where Nome is located. And that's kind of it's pretty notable when you have tundra fires, and especially notable if you have tundra fires, you know, farther north where the tundra is supposed to be always kind of moist when it's summer. So, that's a concern. And, you know, if the fires are intense, they'll burn the peat layer that protects the permafrost. And then if you disturb the permafrost or expose the permafrost and it thaws, and that does release a whole bunch of carbon and also cause some other problems. So,
right.
Yeah.
We've seen examples of that in the Siberian tundra.
Yes, yes.
Once those fires get started, particularly in peat, they will burn, you know, at their own pace. It's not like we're going up there to put those out. They will burn for a very, very long time. And like you say, they're releasing a lot of carbon into the atmosphere, which then creates that feedback loop.
So this is why
it's important.
Even in the forest, you know, you can have that. If you have a very intense fire in the boreal forest, you can disturb the permafrost. Like maybe a normal fire won't. It will burn spruce and be kind of a normal thing. But a really intense fire can expose permafrost in the forest too.
Right. One other thing that's interesting that you write about in your article, again, in Arctic Today, online publication Arctic Today, is that you say an average 49 people a year in the U.S. are killed by a lightning strike and hundreds more are injured. But in India, talk about the number of annual deaths that occur in India due to lightning strikes.
I was super surprised when I talked to Dr. Holdsworth. I guess like most people do, that lightning striking people is really ultra, ultra rare, almost never happens. And he told me that, you know, it does happen. and I looked up with the National Weather Service, and they got this, you know, average is like between like 49 is the average they showed. And I was pretty surprised to see that in the U.S. I don't know what is going on in India, but I know that it's a huge problem, and there's a kind of a task force and a project that the government's doing to try to reduce that risk. But 2,000 to 3,000 or so people a year get killed by lightning there, and according to, you know, their government. And I don't know why that is, but it's people working in farm areas.
Right. Right.
And I don't know, maybe other countries don't keep records as much as, say, India does. But yes, and Dr. Holdsworth told me that, and I was really surprised. I guess you could imagine people getting injured, you know, if they're like up in the mountains or something, or they're in some kind of facility that gets hit by lightning and then, you know, they get burned or something.
Right.
But it was very surprising for sure.
Right. And, well, go ahead now.
Before we, you know, wrap up, we wanted to ask about your publication, which focuses entirely on news in the Arctic, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we do have a kind of expansive definition of the Arctic because you could have the definition that the Arctic is everything above the Arctic Circle, but we kind of put in the Bering Sea. I report a lot about the Bering Sea, and I'll throw in some stuff about Anchorage, which is, you know, we're not technically in the Arctic. The publication is it's actually a spinoff of what used to be part of the Alaska Dispatch, which became the Alaska Dispatch News after it bought the Anchorage Daily News, and then there was a bankruptcy and a lot of business history. But anyway, Arctic Today is I guess a legacy of the Alaska Dispatch, and it's run by the former publisher of the Alaska Dispatch. So, and I'm a longtime Alaska reporter, and I became the lead Arctic reporter for the Alaska Dispatch. So that's how I got onto this.
Okay. Well,
it's online only.
All right. We got to wrap up. So what is the website?
It's called Arctic Today. And ArcticToday.com.
Perfect. Urith Rosen writes for ArcticToday.com. Thank you so much for joining. Really fascinating article. We look forward to some more.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of This Green Earth.
And if you did, we hope you'll take a minute to rate us, share us, and leave a comment.
You can email us your thoughts and ideas for future shows at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
Join us next week on This Green Earth.